Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to another special bonus edition of the Paul Ryder Tapes. Oh, we've got a really special guest for you this week. He was a really good friend of Paul's and a label mate on Factory, and he is still an international megastar in his own right, with a career that's been going even longer than the Mondays. He started off as the bassmeister in Joy Division, which then of course morphed into New Order, where he was responsible for creating their signature and iconic bass sound. He's had his side project Revenge and is still out touring with his newer outfit, Peter Hook and the Light. The name's a bit of a dead giveaway, isn't it? It's the bass ace, the icon, the legend. That is Mr. Peter Hook, or more affectionately known as Hooky.
There we go.
We met at when you DJed at Chico's fundraiser.
Yeah, I met you then, and then
I met you before I met Paul. I had a drink with you in the Trevor in Chorlton with Andy Fisher and Mikey Lights about 7 million years ago. And
I saw Andy Fisher actually on Saturday. He came to our 25th anniversary.
Wow. I haven't seen him. I haven't seen him probably since that night.
Well, we should start whenever you like.
Yeah, we already did start.
There you go. Fantastic.
It's very informal. It's not like a very kind of.
No, that's fine. I mean, what would you like to know?
Well, he really respected you and talked very fondly of you. And you actually were quite instrumental in the story. He talks about being at the gym.
Absolutely.
And seeing you in the gym, and thinking, I'll give him the demo tape. But instead of giving it to you in the gym, he broke into the gym's office, found the records, found your address, and then went round to your house. Do you remember any of that?
I mean, am I getting confused here, or did I think he was a postman, or was he masquerading?
He actually was a postman as well.
Right, okay. Because what happened was that. I can remember the day, actually. He put the tape through the door. So the tape, I've still got the tape.
Have you?
Yeah.
You've still got it?
Yeah.
Oh, could we get a copy of what's on it?
If I could find the bloody thing, yeah.
Could you?
What happened is that when I did the Joy Division auction, I found it. And I put it with my New Order cassettes. So when I did the New Order auction, I couldn't find it. And I thought, where the hell have I put it? So I've got the Hacienda auction to do next. So I'm thinking that it's somewhere in my pile of Hacienda crap.
Oh, okay.
It's huge. But I have seen it, and I've seen it quite recently, funnily enough, because as soon as I came across it, I thought, oh my God, there's the bloody tape that Paul put through my letterbox. Because what happened is that I was actually there when it came through the letterbox. So I opened the door and there was a postman there and looks a bit shocked. And I said, have you put through this through the door? You know, because it was just the cassette. No explanation or anything. Just
no letter with it or anything? Not in an envelope?
No, just the cassette.
Right.
So he said, yeah. He said, it's my band. Could you have a listen? And I was like, yeah, of course. Why not? It wasn't the first time that it had happened to me. And it's not the last either. So he went off. I can't even remember it. I wouldn't even say sheepishly, to be honest. He just went, right, thanks, and went. This was when I lived in Moston. So I think the reason that I managed to catch him so quickly was that the front door was into the living room. So literally, I think I was sat on the stairs because I used to sit on the stairs and watch telly, because I think if in those days we didn't have a settee, we only had two deck chairs, and this was when we were very poor, and my friend had come round and broken one of the deck chairs. Right. So my girlfriend was sat in the deck chair and I used to sit on the stairs and watch.
Was this in the Joy Division days?
No, it was New Order.
Was it?
Yeah, it was New Order, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so my ear would be here and the letterbox was there. So when he put the tape through, I was there, yeah. You know, and that's why I managed to open the door and, you know, catch it. So what happened then was that all of us, me and Bernard specifically, we're producing all the factory acts. We were using New Order's equipment to enhance, shall we say, also to give us experience, also because we loved it. We loved doing it, the pair of us, me and Barney in particular. We would hijack all New Order's gear and do all our recording projects with it. I'd already done the Stockholm Monsters, Royal Family and the Poor. I'd done quite a few by that time, as had Barney. So when I got the tape and listened to it, I thought, wow, this is interesting. I wouldn't say it was of the, you know, the highest quality, but it certainly had a shambolic edginess to it that was very interesting. And when you consider how the Mundy sound is very accepted now as a big influence on a lot of people, that sound, that sort of shambling, you know, a lot of looseness but funkiness type thing came across in the demo. Wow. So I took it to Factory and I gave it to Tony Wilson and said, you should listen to this. They sound really good. They come from Little Alton. He must have told me that he was from Little Alton.
Yeah.
Because obviously we had a big thing in common. Now, was Sean a postman as well? Yeah, because Sean tells a story where he used to steal my postcards that I used to send my mother in Little Alton. What a bastard. He's never changed that. And he tells this story. I'm sure it was in one of his books. He said, yeah, he used to pull the postcard out and it'd be from me. So he'd keep it. No wonder my mother used to go mad at me for not bloody keeping in touch, because he was stealing the freaking postcards. So anyway.
Tall story, that one.
Yes, but an interesting one. So the thing is that Tony had the tape. I gave him the tape. I don't know why he gave it me back.
I know, I was going to say, it's a miracle that you got it back.
Yeah. I sort of carried on then. And Barney came into the rehearsal room and said to me, oh, I'm producing this new band from Little Alton, from where you used to live. And I went, are you? And he said, yeah. He said, the Happy Mondays. And I went, you bastard. Phoned Tony up. I said, you fucking bastard. I brought you that tape and you've given it him to produce. Oh, I was really, really annoyed. And him and Derek Johnson, wasn't it, went on to do the production of whatever they did for the Mondays.
And what did that become, what they produced with that?
Oh, God, I mean, it must have been the first single. Yeah. But, I mean, I went like that then.
Right.
shit, I am mutant bastards. I was really, really pissed off. And then I noticed in Bezzy's book that he didn't mention that his first gig with the Happy Mondays was at the Hacienda supporting New Order.
Right.
He made it sound like the Happy Mondays were playing on their own, which may have been wishful thinking on his part. But yeah, once they were in the fold, they became very, very close, as we always had been. As soon as a band appeared on Factory and we became friends with them, like Certain Ratio, Certain Ratio would play with us all the time. Mm. And then it became the same for the Mondays. Mm. They started to play with us all the time. And of course, they then, once they were on Factory, their, shall we say, their interest level in the Hacienda went up, because then they could get in for free. And they really did become, you know, a big part of that whole Hacienda mess. Mm. But, I think that was 1984 when he gave me the tape. I'm not absolutely sure. But yeah, I mean, it went on to, of course, when we were all off our heads completely in 1987.
Do you remember the first time you saw him after he'd given you the tape and they'd started to do stuff? Like, did he ever come up to you and go, thanks for that?
No, I don't remember anything like that. Because then they became a big part. Whenever we went to Factory, they were always there. Like us, they were skint. Like us, they were very light-fingered. That Salford tar brush does. And we were always going down there, nicking stuff, always hanging out together. We always used to hang out together in the Hacienda. I saw them probably much more than I wanted to, if the truth be told. I know so much about them. I remember the first night that their manager, what's he called? Ethan McGough, yeah. I remember I knew him, and he was telling me that he was going to see the Mondays to be their manager, because they were practicing in the same pub that the Stockholm Monsters used to practice. It was at the back of Wetherspoons in Piccadilly. On the corner, it was a right shithole. And he was telling me he was going up because he was thinking of being their manager. And I was like, well, fucking good luck, mate. You're going to need it. And Paul and Sean had fallen out. When he got there, Paul was there with the rest of the band, and Sean came in late. And when Sean arrived, Paul promptly got out a penknife and stabbed him.
No.
You never heard that one?
No. Paul stabbed Sean?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Nathan McGough. Well, it's only a penknife.
Oh.
But I mean, same intent, you know. He wasn't waiting for him with a machete. He must have been so fucking pissed off with him that he just thought, ah, fuck you, have that, you know. I don't even know where he stabbed him, but I remember Nathan McGough being absolutely appalled and shocked and in bits. And I said, are you going to manage him then? And he went, of course I am. Their feuds were, as I'm sure you know, were, oh my God, it's the only way that brothers can, if they hadn't have been brothers, basically one of them would probably be in prison for some kind of physical, mental, or grievous bodily harm. I've got two brothers, so I know exactly the way that they fight. And I suppose their fights became a bit more public because of the band. You know,
Can you think of any other incidents of them fighting?
Hundreds of incidents. They were always at each other's throats. And it's interesting with Sean because, oh my God, I remember Phil Fact, he was always going on about Sean because, to be honest with you, the others may have been a bit wayward, but they were always quite normal.
Yeah.
And humble almost,
yeah.
And very, very likeable. Mm-hmm. And yet Sean, and quite self-confessed, is on another fucking strata, mm-hmm. right? And Phil Fact always used to tell their adventures. I suppose in a funny way, we were like big brothers, maybe a bit mentor-ish. So yeah. there was a sort of healthy amount of respect shown, I have to say. Mm-hmm. What happened was that as the drugs became worse, then their behaviour became frankly intolerable. I remember playing with them when they supported us in Primal Scream in Wembley Arena, I think. And we'd arranged for the staff at Dry to have a day out. So they'd come down to Wembley to see New Order, Primal Scream and the Happy Mondays. And Rob Gretner had arranged a room for them with drinks and food in, because they'd come down on the coach, they were seeing the band, and then they were going back. It was just an excuse for a piss up and to be everyone be off their heads on the coach. And I remember our tour manager coming in to me, Terry Mason, and he said to me, he said, okay, he said, oh, fuck, he said, look, he said, come here, look what the Mondays have done. And I went, what? I said, what? So anyway, he took me to this room where Dry, that was all laid out for the staffing, and they'd fucking totaled it.
Oh, no.
Drank all the booze, fucking thrown the food all over the place. They just fucking, and I was like, oh, you fucking bastard. I went storming into their dressing room, and basically the rest of the band were all hiding against the wall, you know, with the road crew. I mean, their road crew was pretty ribald as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Sean was just stood there in the middle of his fucking tits again. And I said, what the fuck are you doing, you bastards? That was for the men. And the staff at Dry really looked after them as well, because they were in Dry all the time.
Yeah.
I said, that's fucking so bang out of order. I said, how can you do that to people? And Sean turned around to me and went, okay, what do you think fucking cleaners are paid for? And I was just about that.
Yeah.
From planting him. And he, oh God, I mean, if I remember, Terry dragged me out, you know.
Yeah.
He was such a twat. But he excels in it, and he's just very good at it. And to be honest with you, Paul and him are like chalk and cheese.
Mm-hmm.
They really are very, very different. We went through a lot together. We're certainly more than acquaintances. Maybe not friends, because you work together mainly. Friends tended to be very insular. I think, I would imagine they still are. Once you get your gang, you never go anywhere. You're just in your gang. You fraternize and move around, but it's always your gang. So there's like a separate part of it, but another part of it. So the Mondays toured with us extensively. And I must admit, I found them all absolutely freaking delightful. Apart from Sean, who doesn't give a fuck. You know, all of them. Bez, wonderful man. Absolutely wonderful, wonderful man. All Paul, all of them. Even the keyboard player I used to see all the time. What was his name? What did you used to call him?
PD, Paul Davis. Yeah.
God, yeah. Because he lived on the same street as me and Carolina Hearn in Northenden.
Okay. So,
and that was when he'd left the Mondays. I was actually in the club the night that guy stamped on his head, didn't he? Stamped on his head. Do you remember that one? It was in Longside. We were in a club that used to be underneath a hotel, and he was off his head, as he usually was. I mean, my God, I've never seen anybody in more situations. He got really attacked that night. They nearly killed him. Salford lot. Salford kid had his foot in a plaster cast with a heel set in the plaster cast.
Wow.
I remember PD telling me this kid took exception to PD for some reason, and it all went wrong. This kid ended up stamping on his head with this crutch with his foot in a plaster cast. It was disgusting. PD, I was never the same again. But yeah, so anyway, Paul and I, when we played in this tent, PD was at his keyboard, but he was hung backwards, like he was doing the limbo. and everybody seemed to be moving round him like it was quite normal. And I was going, what the f-? He looked like he was just about to limbo dance at the keyboard, with his hand on the keyboard. He's standing right up at the ceiling of this fucking tent. And I went over to Paul and I said, is he all right? And Paul just went, no, don't worry about him, Wookie. He said, we're just trying out some new drugs on him.
Oh, really? What, new recreational drugs or medical drugs?
Probably medical. God, no one knows what the fuck they were trying out on him. But it seems that he was always the one that if anything appeared, he would was always up for trying it. And whatever they'd fucking give him, it looked like ketamine or something. Oh, my God. And he played the whole gig like that.
Did he manage to actually play? He managed to actually play that.
To lead him out? Well, I mean, God knows what he was playing. So, yeah, I mean, thinking about our relationship, it was actually a very long relationship right the way through all of Factory and even that aspect of knowing them all, you know, Rowetta, Bez, Paul, all of them, you know, right the way through. So I suppose there's always been a closeness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Rowetta. She was at our 25th anniversary, and she was saying that I was so delighted for them to see that they got those gigs in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they've never been able to go back to America since that infamous interview, the one where they were homophobic. But I know them. And it was just Northern taking the piss.
Right.
But unfortunately, sometimes our sense of humour from the North does not translate very well, especially with Americans.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I mean, it was very sad news. I remember going up to him. I live in Mallorca in the summer.
Oh.
Undies played one of their first reformation gigs. They played at Mallorca Rocks.
Right.
And I was able to go and see them all, and it was when the first time that they actually got the original lineup. Because Sean actually a lot of gigs with the Hacienda, with God knows some weird,
yeah, with other random musicians that weren't actually the real Mondays.
Some of them were just bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, I remember going and seeing Happy Mondays in the Isle of Man on a Hacienda night. And oh my God, they couldn't have been more far removed from the Upper Mondays if they'd have fucking tried. So yeah, I mean, it is a strange being asked to talk about Paul and his life is actually quite strange because ours was very, very closely entwined with there. We had an awful, awful mistake of inviting them lot over to Ibiza when we were recording and made a complete mess of it, cost Factory a fucking fortune. Everything that could possibly go wrong with that session went wrong. And then lo and behold, not only does he let us go to Ibiza and make a balls a bit, he then lets the Mondays go to Barbados. Was it Barbados?
Yeah.
And make a balls of it as well. I was like, fucking hell, Tony, have you learnt nothing? So yeah, I suppose it's odd, really.
I mean, Manchester's produced some outstanding bass players. Obviously, there's you. And I think there's probably not a person in England or America who hasn't heard your work. Just, I mean, that's quite a... If you imagine everybody in America, everybody in the UK has heard something that you've done. That's incredible, isn't it? When you think...
Yes, I mean, it is. And I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful to my mother. It's like an award speech. Grateful to my mother and my father, who I never knew, for giving me something, obviously. And the Sex Pistols for inspiring me to do something I never considered in a million years.
Were you at the Sex Pistols gig at the Free Trade Hall?
Yes, I was at both. And it was me. I'd been reading about them in the music press. And I was on holiday in Cornwall. Four of us were sleeping in my car, some holiday. I bought I can't remember whether it was Sounds or the Melody Maker, and the front picture was the Sex Pistols fighting at the screen on the green.
Right.
So I was aware of punk, even though I was a heavy metal fan. To me, their attitude and their sort of everyday life, their struggle, if you like, sort of rang a lot more bells with me than Jimmy Page or Ozzy Osbourne, even though I liked heavy metal music. So I was intrigued by it. When I came home, I noticed, I always read the evening news. I still do it now, every day. I always read the evening news, cover to cover. And in the small ads, I spotted an advert for the Sex Pistols at the Lesser Free Trade Hall for 50p. And I phoned Barney up and said, listen, I said, there's a band we should go and see. It's only 50p. although probably 50p then was quite a lot of money. Yeah. I said, we should go and see these bands. I said, they have a fight at every gig. That was the allure. So me, Barney and Terry Mason, my friend from school, and Barney's wife went to see them. And we got to the Lesser Free Trade Hall. I knew where the Lesser Free Trade Hall was because when I worked at the town hall, we had our works dues in the Lesser Free Trade Hall. I'd been carried out on a couple of occasions, so I knew where it was. So I was the leader from that part. So, yeah, we went to see him, and it was terrible, to be honest. They were fucking terrible. It was just a massive feedback. And Johnny Rotten telling everyone to fuck off. And I was watching it, and I thought, you know what? I could do that. I could tell everyone to fuck off. Barney had a guitar, and I simply said to him on the way out, I said, we should form a band. We should form a punk band. And he went, all right, you go and get a bass. And I went, right. And of course, I didn't know what a bass was.
Amazing.
Yeah. When I went to the shop, I said to the guy, I want a bass guitar. And he said, oh, how about this one? And I went, oh, no. I said, that's only got 4 strings. I said, my mates has got 6. And he said to me, that's because your mates is a guitar, you knob, and this is a bass. And I went, oh, right, okay, miss. You know, I was 20 years old.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, I literally didn't know my ass from my elbow. So he said, do you want this one or what? And I went, how much is it? And he went, 30 quid. And my mother had given me 35 quid to get this bass guitar. So he said, I said, right, I'll have it. It was shit guitar, absolutely shit guitar.
You still got it?
No, I sold it in the Joy Division auction.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, there was all this stuff that I had was just rotting away. And I had so much of it. And it's been wonderful over the years to look at it. But when we split up as New Order, there was so much ambivalence between us as people. It didn't make me want to celebrate or keep anything to do with either band. It really
sad, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but you know what? I don't miss them. The only time I miss them is when some bastard shows me it and goes, oh, can you sign this for me, Hucky? And I go, oh, you bastard, he's got me thing, whatever it may be. It doesn't bother me. And to be honest with you, a lot of my great friends I actually bought the stuff and then brought it back round to me. I thought, like, oh, fucking hell. You know, like, oh, I bought it. I couldn't bear anybody else having it. My great mate said from Miami, David Sultan, he said, I couldn't bear anybody else having it. I brought it you back. I was like, oh, fuck off, mate. I was like, oh, God. So, yeah, it's a very strange thing, you know, but it's actually nice.
Yeah.
And if you ever consider it with Paul's stuff, I think that there's a definite wonderful feeling in that you have these great bands in Manchester that changed Manchester, they changed England, they changed the world. And the thing is that people adore getting their hands on something to do with it. And as I said to you, mine was just rotting away peacefully in the lockup. Mouldy as hell, just getting worse and worse. And yeah, it actually was a great feeling to let it go. And the cash came in very handy.
Right. You know, yeah.
We supported Christie's with it and the Epilepsy Society as well. Yeah. So yeah, you know, these things are worth bearing in mind. But yeah, I was at the Sex Pistols. I went to see the Sex Pistols 4 times in Manchester.
Wow.
Twice at the Electric Circus, the one with the riot. Mm-hmm. And that was the last time they played in England, in the north of England anyway.
Wow. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about, do you remember when you very kindly DJed at Chico's fundraiser at Palace Hotel? I don't know if you noticed, but you were put in the wrong room. I don't know if you ever knew or were told, but you were put in the wrong room. When you were DJing, all the people were in the reception room upstairs. And you
that's
just...
quiet. Yeah.
Somebody had messed up, so all the people arrived and were upstairs in a reception room. And you were DJing downstairs in the dining room and there was nobody...
But
But you just, you were so great, gracious. You just carried on like a complete trooper.
That doesn't bother me. Do you know what? It's very happy Mondays. I remember as Joy Division once, we did a gig at Oldham Tower Club. Right. And this Oldham Tower Club was a monthly night. Sad Cafe had played the month before us and sold it out. And we managed to get a booking for the gig, 30 quid for the gig at Oldham Tower Club. And nobody turned up. Oh. No one. Right. So Joy Division actually played first half of the set to no one. And I remember the guy was sweeping the floor, and every time that we finished a song, he'd turn round to us and go, "Do you know any Hendrix?" Go, "No, fuck off." And he'd go, "Oh," and so he did that on every song. And then two punks girls came in, and we thought, oh, you know, the audience had increased by 200%. And these two punk girls came right to the front of the stage, and they were looking at us, and we were like, "Oh, yeah, this is good. This is better." And when we finished the song, one of the girls went, "Hey, are you the Frantic Elevators?" And we went, "No, we're Joy Division." And the girl, "I told you we've come to the wrong club," and they left.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And then, I suppose, if you look at Bitforon and you look at, you know, headlining Glastonbury five times to 175,000 people, as long as it's somewhere in between, it was a wonderful thing to be able to help. You know, that's what it's, I mean, you know, it's one great thing about our job that I always think is that when we do get the chance to help people, we get to do something that we love as well, which is so easy. It always makes it so easy a decision for me to do it. So it was a pleasure. But yeah, I didn't know it was in the wrong room. Bugger. Yeah.
But you were very gracious. No, we're very grateful for that. Can you just talk a little bit about what you feel about Paul's bass playing style?
It's always quite funny when you've got a band that are that close to you, right? Because as I said to you before, they don't become sort of musicians. They're more your people. So to be honest with you, I wouldn't judge him in any way. He was just a mate. We're all in it together. And our aim was to educate the world through Factory Records, through our music. And I never expected him to say anything to me, and I never said anything to him. We were just together. So I suppose in a weird way, I always took it for granted. I don't know how to describe it, actually. I didn't analyse what he did. I just knew he did what he did well, just like the rest of us, and he fitted in well, just like the Mondays did, and it was just cool. If anything, the Mondays music has been spoilt for me by our closeness.
Right.
I never got to judge them from a distance because I was always so involved with them right from the start. So whether it was emotionally or anything like that, I was never able to listen to them in any way, shape or form from an unbiased point of view. They were always my Happy Mondays. And they were always Factory bands, so we were always very clammy. We were always very close. And it was us against the world.
Yeah.
I just knew Paul as a really nice guy. He was always lovely. He was always nice to be with, easy to be with, very genuine. And I must admit that I did feel for him in having to put up with the fucking maelstrom that was his brother. So a lot of the time, that was our mutual bond, if you like, going, oh, fucking hell, what's he done now? We were always having to put up with him in some way. Like, as I told you before, when the gig in London, and he was suffering, if you like, in the same way. So, yeah, I mean, you sort of had a bond that went a little further. I mean, it's very, the bond with all those factory bands in those early years, particularly the late 80s, was very, very productive in a way that everybody worked to help each other.
Mm.
And it was really nice for that because everybody liked Tony.
Yeah.
Ross Breton was fantastic to the Mondays. Mm. He really, really did help them look after them. Mm. Nathan was Nathan. He could be a very strange character.
Mm.
Nathan. I always found the band as a whole to be absolutely lovely. And whenever I was with them, it always felt like coming home.
Yeah.
I went to New York with them when we did the Hacienda night in New York, spent the week with them. You just so easily relaxed into it. Yeah. And it became our struggle, not their struggle. It was all ours. And we did it all together. And it was a wonder, thinking about it now, and I must admit, you've actually brought something out there, that it was very special, that stable mates thing. Mm-hmm. Especially with the Hacienda, because what happened then was our social life became entwined as well. I mean, I remember got the kitchen once. Did you ever go there?
The kitchen? Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It was the two flats knocked into one, didn't it? And a lovely kid used to run the door. Everyone was off the fucking heads. I was off my head when I went in there. And the Mondays were all in. Paul was there with everyone else and Bez, and they had like a house band playing. And Bez kept coming over to me and going, okay, get on the bass. And this guy playing the bass was about 6 foot black dude. He was immense. And I kept saying to Paul, you play the fucking bass, you play it. And he's going, no, you play it. And Bez is going, okay, fucking, you play it and all this. And I was like, I was off my head on ecstasy, absolutely trolling. And in the end, Bez went over to this dude, took the bass off him, came over to me and gave it me. And I was trying to give it Paul. And he was like that. And he's going, oh, my God. And this dude was just like, you know. Oh, man. In the end, I had to get up and go home. Like, every time I gave the bloody bass back to this guy, Bez would take it off him and give it back to me. So, yeah, we went through some amazing escapades. That period before Factory went bump was an absolute delight to be with them. Sean disappeared up his own arse, which was very sad for the band, and particularly sad, I think, for Paul because of being his brother. So, yeah, but I mean, it was something we all had to put up with, to be honest.
Mm.
So the Mondays has always been one of those funny bands where they just about were about to make it, and then some frustrating thing had happened and it had knocked them down. It's always snakes and ladders with the Mondays, and that's why they fitted in with us, because it was always fucking snakes and ladders with us as well, and with the way it was with Joy Division and the way it was with the Hacienda. We did actually have a lot of feelings and a lot of happenings in common. So, yeah, it was funny, but I've always been delighted to see them, particularly when they weren't supporting us. Rest, you know, I'd be like, oh, my God, I remember one gig at G-Mex that was absolutely incredible. And we all suffered. We all made mistakes. I think our retinue of people that we had round us wasn't healthy. And I think the Mondays went through that as well.
Absolutely, yeah, they did.
Got them a bad name. Mm-hmm. And again, you'd be going down that ladder Every time someone's pushing you up in a funny way, you're always doing something to fuck it up. And I think we all made a hell of a lot of mistakes in the late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but I suppose it's that funny thing. We all made it together.
Yeah. Did you go to the funeral?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I heard that you were there, but I didn't see you. Do you have any memories of that event?
I did have the awful bloody feeling that every one of us was sat there thinking, who's going to be fucking next? It really was rock royalty. It's amazing. These days are so sad, but are so special as well. He was a lovely man. He was a great musician. And over the years, has been a great friend and associate. So to go to the funeral for me was an honour. And to be able to show that respect that is needed to be shown is very, very important. And I must admit, I was very proud of Ian McCulloch doing what he did in Rowetta and everybody being there. It was very important to do that. I mean, I'm one of the people that thinks that these things are important.
Yeah. Oh, you would have loved it. He would have absolutely loved it.
I'm sure the older you get, the more important it becomes to think that there's an afterlife. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure he was up there laughing his bollocks off.
Definitely. You
know, seeing everybody together. And funnily enough, his funeral was one of the reasons that made me and my wife desperate to celebrate our 25th anniversary. Because the people you were seeing at his funeral, I hadn't seen for years. Mm-hmm. And it was so wonderful. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow. And I was saying to my wife, and she said, well, that's why we need to celebrate something that's not a bloody funeral.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because I've not lived in Manchester for 14 years, but the funeral due afterwards, I saw so many old friends, and I thought, we need to see each other more frequently.
I know.
Funerals. I know. So it's birthday coming up at Christmas and Chico's 21st. And we're having a do. Come, I'll send you an invitation.
Thank you. That'd be wonderful. But, I mean, it's true, isn't it? You get the only times you see everybody are at funeral. But I'll tell you one thing that happened at the funeral that was fucking amazing, right? I bumped into...
Beep. Beep.
Outside. Now, there was only one toilet at the funeral. Did you notice?
I didn't know. I never went.
One toilet, right? And it was a long service.
Yeah.
Which was wonderful. It doesn't bother me in one iota. But of course, all us old blokes needed a piss, didn't we? So anyway, at the end, as everybody was coming out, there was a big queue for the toilet.
Oh, okay.
At the head of the queue was the priest waiting to go in. So anyway, I'm stood there with
it. Beep. Beep, beep.
Not a line.
Beep.
Are you coming to the bog, okay? Because, I mean, I've not done drugs for 18 years. So I said, no, mate, you go on your own. And my abiding memory of that is watching
beep
and
beep
push the priest out of the way when they went in the toilet to have a fucking line at Paul Ryder's funeral. Right? And I just thought, my God, Manchester, what a place.
Brilliant.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Oh, that is spectacular.
Maybe I should do a book.
Yeah, let's do a we'll do a podcast with you.
It's always a pleasure because, again, we've been very lucky. As a musician, I've been very lucky. We've worked hard, but we have had luck. The Mondays, and I'm delighted that they're still going, and I'm delighted that they're doing so well because they've had to work hard and they've had so many ups and downs. It's almost criminal the way that we've all been having to go up and down just because we're shit at business.
It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
You're welcome. And, keep in touch. Anything I can do for you, whatever you like.
All right. Real pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Talk again soon. All right.
Take care of yourself.
Bye.
That's all we have for you this week. We're playing out in a moment with Into You. It's from Paul Ryder's Big Arm album Radiator, which is out now. If you want to watch the video version of this episode, it's going to premiere on our Glistening Stories YouTube channel on Sunday, March 17th at 8 p.m. UK time. And I will be live in the chat as usual with Chico. Please subscribe to the podcast so that you don't miss out on anything and give us a nice review and rating if you've not already done so. We really, really appreciate these. And thank you to every single one of you for listening. It really means the world. And Paul would be absolutely blown away by the response to this project. We really love the community that we're building. We've got lots more treats in store for all of you. Lots and lots of love to you all. Big love and thanks to the legend that is Peter Hook, and of course to the man himself, the late great Paul Anthony Ryder.
I got the hunger, will speak no more. My magic legs will take me there. Electric shoes to walk upon, a smiling sun to keep me warm.